All right, so welcome everybody, Erev Tov. As we continue this series that Nili is putting together on major halachic questions that were relevant at the founding of the State of Israel, which continue to resonate to this very day. So to change things up a little bit from my original plan, we're going to talk about something which really intersects with the news that's happening right now in Israel, for those who are following, and also something which is germane to this week's Parsha. And that is the state, the halachic status of Israel's court system. Now, it may not seem like the most pressing thing from a halachic worldview, from a political worldview. Right now, this is everything that's going on, where the massive showdown between the government and the Knesset, which wants to strip away some of the powers of the Supreme Court, and the court, which wants to hold on to them, and the opposition, and they're having a real, good old-fashioned Israeli style brawl. It's like whenever you think like things are lively in American politics, you just look what's happening there in Israel, and they really are much better than we are at keeping things wild. But as we'll see, it's also happens to be a really, really important halachic topic, which specifically at the time of the founding of the state, anybody who was anybody was discussing this question. And we're going to start a little of the screen share now. With who is supreme, the status of the Israeli court systems. I guess this is a bit of a double entendre, because the question is not just the court versus the government, which again they're arguing now, but the court versus the Beis Din. Rav Herzog, the first, I think, Rav Rashi, at the time of Hakmat HaMedina. So he has an article. We're going to come back to this at the end of the Shir Mirat Hashem. But he wrote an article, I think, in 1953. And he said there that there are four major problems which Jews who are Shomrei Torah mitzvot have to deal with when their vision of what a Jewish state and what a Jewish society should look like is clashing against reality for the first time. And three of the four that he puts on the list would be on the top of anyone's list in 2023, just like he had them on his list 70 years ago. Number one, and he says, oh, let's read this piece inside. Am Yisrael Shomrei Torah Mitzvah, Hayom Tzarin HaGadol. Right, nowadays, to our immense pain, Ein HaMatzav Kazeh, things are not the way that they should be. HaBayot Yikariyot Mizdakfot Lefaneinu Hayom Bimlo Kamatan Hay. Here are the four main problems which we are facing. Number one, Havtachat Shmirat Shabbat Kadshenu. Right, what does Shabbos look like in a Jewish state? Massive, massive question then. Massive, massive question now. As Sarah by Moshe Harrigan just wrote about this topic this very past Shabbos. Transportation on Shabbos. Can stores be open on Shabbos? Jewish state, right? The Al Kapanam Bifar Hasya. We can't control what happens in people's homes, but shouldn't a Jewish state you walk out onto the street? And shouldn't there be the Avirah of Shabbos anywhere you go? That's thing number one, that he puts on the list. Totally, totally relevant. The second piece he has on his list, once again, an issue which there was troubling them now, then absolutely troubling us now. Right? Bet havtachat hakashrut hatziborit. What does kashrus look like in a Jewish state? Right. You ever travel to Israel? Rabbanut, Mahadrin, what Mahadrin, which city's Rabbanut is better, which is worse? People who don't want to keep kosher, what are they allowed to do? What are they not allowed to do? Absolutely as much of a problem, as much of a controversy, as much of a debate right now as it was in 1953, when again, the state is first setting out, and Rav Herzog is saying, here are the major issues we have to deal with. Skip Gimel for a second. Dalit, says Rav Herzog. What's one of the third of the big four over here? Lahavtiach shelo tehei afsharut shel nisuin v'girushin. What does marriage look like? Ela kedat Moshe v'Yisrael. Is marriage going to be civil marriage, secular marriage, or is it all going to be according to the halacha? Massive, massive question now. Right? What exactly does marriage look like? The role of the rabbanut? Absolutely. The same question, right? We easily could have had a shiur on any of these three topics tonight, and it would feel just as resonant today as it did when he was writing about this, looking at the founding of the state. What is tragic, is that we don't really identify with the third of the four that he has. It doesn't feel like a pressing issue to us, and it really, really should. It happens to be, if we were going to put a fourth one on the list.
You got Shabbos, and the other one is Mishpat HaTorah, and then is marriage.
Yeah, exactly. So now if I had to put a fourth one, I don't know, I would ask everyone on the Zoom, can chime in. What would you have put on besides Kashrus, marriage, and Shabbos? What fourth major piece would you put on in the current day and age?
What would you put on? Kashrus, Shabbos, marriage?
Yeah. Like major current problems. So I probably would have thought that conversion, that Geirus would be on the list. That's the one that I would that jumps to my mind, especially in the last 30 years, you know, since like the influx of Russians has come in, which is, you know, amazing in many ways, but also presents some serious complications. But that's not the one of Herzog Hayes. The third on the list for us is the fourth, the shortest one, Mishpat HaTorah. What does the Israeli legal system look like? For the first time in 2,000 years, and really the first time since more than 2,000 years, because, you know, the last 100 years or so before the destruction of the Second Pesach Mikdash, Judea was not an independent state. You know, we were a part of the Roman Empire already. That's why the Pesach Mikdash was destroyed when we revolted against Rome. For the first time since a couple of generations of the Hashmonaim, we have an absolutely independent Jewish state. Torah tells us in Parsha Shoftim, all right, Shoftim v'Shoftim t'in l'cha b'chol sharecha. We know what the judges are supposed to look like. We know what the laws are supposed to look like. Says Rav Herzog, why is it that l'davon libeinu, to our immense pain, we do not have a halachic legal system? And so the question that everybody is going to fight about is the halachic legitimacy of a secular Israeli court. So let's begin to look at some of the makoros and see, is this okay? Is this not okay? Should we be working with the current system? Should we be rejecting the system and trying to throw it out? Let's see what's going to happen. So we have to build up some basic background. The background is going to come from two Gemaras. So we'll look at one Gemara over here in source number two. We'll flesh it out for a bit, and then we'll look at another Gemara in source number four. The Gemara in Gittin on Daf Pei Ches establishes the prohibition against bringing court cases to Gentile courts, or let's say, literally, at least it is over here, pagan courts, idolatrous courts. The Gemara talks about Abaya and Rav Yosef, who is his Rebbe. Abaya finds Rav Yosef, who is busy engaged in commissioning divorces. Abaya is a little bit surprised, because Abaya says, Rav Yosef, you're my Rebbe. I have obviously immense reverence for you. However, you do not have biblical smicha. To be a true, authentic judge, you need to have the original smicha, which goes all the way back to Moshe Rabbeinu. That smicha, for reasons we're not going to get into tonight, or Soloveitchik has a whole article about it, can only be given in Eretz Yisrael. We are living in Babylonia. So you may be a massive Talmud Chacham, Rav Yosef is the Gadol Hador in Bavel, but he doesn't have full smicha. So you are not a halachically licensed judge, and therefore you shouldn't be doing this. He quotes a brisa, v'tanya, Harabi Tarfon Omeros, the time to our parsha in a second. Kol makom sha'ata motzi igorio shel ovdei kochavim. Anytime that you find a Gentile court. Af al pisha dinehem kedine Yisrael. Even if their legal system is plagiarized from the Torah. You could walk into the court and, you know, it's a bunch of Romans up there, but you see on the bookshelves behind them are the Shulchan Aruch and the Mishnah Berurah. Interesting. Nonetheless, I atara shailis dakeik lahem, you're not allowed to go to a Gentile court. Shenamar, this week's parsha, ve'ela mishpatim asher tasim lifnehem, the Torah says, these are the laws that you will bring before them. Who are them? Lifnehem, the low lifnei ovdei kochavim, you bring your court cases to the Jewish court. You don't bring your court cases to the non-Jewish court. Dabar acher, this is not our topic, but we should just get it on the record. The Gemara says, the Braisa says, another point, lifnei hem, below lifnei hedyotos. So you can only bring your court before your case before a fully authentic bezdin that has smicha, and not before regular Jews. Okay, Rav Yosef explains for standard common court cases, the judges who live outside of Israel serve as the agents of the original Sanhedrin. Anan shlichu sayhu ka'avdinan. This is the halachic basis for all modern batei din for the last at least 1500 plus years. You know, there's nobody at the Bezin of America, there's nobody at the CRC, unfortunately, who has the full smicha going back to the time of Moshe Rabbeinu. But we go to a yeshiva and you get yad and smicha because they recognize, okay, you have halachic expertise. And when the Sanhedrin and Eretz Yisrael realize there are all these Jews who are living in Babel who need to be able to judge court cases, so we're appointed as their agents. We're able to serve as their agents for standard common areas of law, loans, civil cases, administering gittin and the like. Okay, fine. But the key piece that comes out of the Gemara is that unquestionably, no court case can be brought before a Gentile court. So now the question is, what is the basis for this prohibition? And does the prohibition of bringing your court case to a Gentile court, could that possibly apply to a Israeli, Jewish, but secular court? On the one hand, there's no Torah law in the Israeli court. On the other hand, they're Jewish judges. So what's the halacha? So we have to understand the basis for the prohibition against attending a Gentile court. Rashi gives the simplest explanation. There are like four or five among the Rishonim, but the one that's most widely quoted is that of Rashi. And Rashi says, "Hamevi dinei Yisrael lefnei akum." Somebody who brings a Jewish court case to Gentiles, it's hard to tell always with the censor and the Gemaras if this was originally literally an idolater or whether it was originally supposed to be just a Gentile. Barashi says, if you bring the court case to that person, Mechalel es Hashem, we have desecrated the name, God forbid. And here's the key line, Umiyaker et Shem Ha'ilim Lahashbicham or Lahashivam. You have desecrated the name and you have applied value, right? Like yikar, value or glory to the gods of the non-Jews whose court you're going to. You walk into a Roman court. I think Jupiter. I don't know the Roman mythology or Greek mythology better than me, but I think that Zeus or Jupiter is the god of judgment. So you walk into the court and there's a giant statue of Jupiter, a giant statue of Zeus or of Athena above the judge. And look at what the Chil Hashem this is. Down the block, you have Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Tarfon in the Bezdin. And the Jews are not going to Rabbi Akiva's Bezdin. They're going to the Roman Bezdin, to the Jupiter Bezdin down the block. That's a terrible Chil Hashem. They're choosing the legal system of the Ovde Avodah Zarah, says Rashi. And they're not going to the court, which is based on halacha. Now, from Rashi, focuses on the Chil Hashem of going to a pagan court. So one could easily ask the question, okay, but what if the court isn't idolatrous? Now, we didn't have to wait for the last 100 years or 200 years where secular courts became a thing. You know, secular courts are a very modern innovation. The idea of a court which, on the one hand, is Gentile, on the other hand, does not have Avodah Zarah, has been along for a long time, because this was exactly the case of Islamic courts, right? Jews who lived in the land of the Muslims. So when it comes to the halachic status of Christianity as Avodah Zarah, that's a whole long story. Islam, basically not questionable, that Islam is not Avodah Zarah. So could Jews bring their court cases to an Islamic court where there's a big crescent and there's a whole row of Qurans behind the judges? That's not Avodah Zarah. So the consensus of the poskim is that yes, absolutely. And it's best presented here in source number 3 from a question. This is the Shas Jewish of the Tashbates. It's not actually from the Tashbates. The Tashbates, Rav Shimon ben Tzemach Doran, So he lives in Spain. We know the date 1492 from Spain, which is not a good year for the Jews of Spain. But there was another very bad year about 100 years before. In 1391, there's a massive pogrom that erupts all across Spain. I think they think that about 20,000 Jews were murdered. Many thousands of Jews are forced to convert. This is really the beginning of the phenomenon of the Muranos, or the conversos. It actually doesn't begin in 1492. It begins 100 years before that, when many Jews are forcibly baptized. So at that time, the Tashbates, who's very young, I think he's in like his 30s, he's around my age. So he runs away from Spain. He just hops across the Mediterranean Sea to Algeria, where he then lives for the next 50 years. So he's the Rav in North Africa. And then his son is the Rav after him. Both of their tshuvos are quoted in the Beis Yosef, in the Shulchan Aruch, all the time. And then the Tashbates had some grandsons and some great-grandsons. So one volume of the Tashbates' tshuvos is actually from his great, from his grandson, a couple of his great-grandsons. And that volume is called the Chut HaMishulash, right? The three-ply cord. And I think it's a double entendre. It's a three-ply cord because now it's the third generation of this family who are writing tshuvos, because it's the Tashbates' grandson. It's also a three-ply cord because it's a grandson and it's a couple of great-grandsons whose tshuvos are all folded together into this one volume. So it's an unbelievably influential, you know, family in North Africa. This is certainly living in the world of Islam. And so they're asked about bringing court cases to an Islamic court. Hey, it's not Avodah Zarah. So Rashi said already it was a problem of desecrating the name because you're being miyaker shem ha'ililim. You're glorifying their gods. But what about the Muslims? So the rights here in the Tashbates doesn't fly. Nice try, not giving you the kula over here. It says, well, Rashi said about miyaker shem ha'ililim, who kolel da umazo, that includes the religion of this nation being the Muslims. Afal pisha inam ovde avodas elilim, it's not idolatry, Islam is not idolatry. However, hare him makhishim mishpate toresin, they deny the veracity of halacha. They deny Torah. Right? The Muslims think that we just totally mess things up, and so God had to go back to Muhammad and give him the original Masorah to be repaired. They think that they do not accept our Torah. And therefore, he says, somebody who brings a court case to them, Osa iloy ledatam al tarasenu. So he raises their religion above ours, and that's absolutely forbidden. That is the exact same Chil Hashem. So it emerges then, this is the accepted halacha, is any court you go to that doesn't recognize Torah, even if it's not idolatrous, if they don't recognize Torah, they're still going to be a Chil Hashem. Because we say, look at these Jews who are abandoning the halachic Torah court, and they're going to the Roman court, the Christian court, the Islamic court, the American court. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter if there's a cross or a crescent or a Zeus or nothing above the judge's head. It's not Torah. It is unacceptable. Now, if the source sheet had ended here, we would say, that's it. There's nothing left to talk about. Israeli secular law is not based on halacha, as of Herzog said, our immense pain. So a Jew who goes to an Israeli court to adjudicate his case, he's abandoning Torah. Nothing else to talk about. That's a Chil Hashem. It should be totally forbidden. Thing that makes it complicated is that there is another Gemara in Maseches Sanhedrin. We'll skip some of the background to what's going on over here. But basically, the Rabbi Meir in the Mishnah thinks that you can have a case where one party picks one judge and another party picks another judge. How do we get judge number three? So they have to agree to choose judge number three. Fine. Rabbi Meir says each party can reject the other one's choice. So if I say, you know, let's imagine, at least this is the way the Gemara first understands Rabbi Meir. One person says, I want the Rambam to judge my case. I'm living in Egypt. The Rambam is walking around. I want the Rambam as my judge. the other party can look at him and say, I don't know, you know, Rambam, I'm kind of looking for a, this is a serious case. I need a bigger Talmud Chacham. I don't think the Rambam is going to fly. So Rebbe Meir says that each party can reject the suggested judge the other one makes. The Gemara says that's insane. How on earth can you reject a fully legitimate judge? Rebbe Akiva Eiger, you know, Rebbe Moshe Feinstein. How can somebody say, I don't want Rebbe Moshe Feinstein to be my judge? That's obviously absurd. Gemara says, Kol kamine de pasil dayane, can't be that you could disqualify judges. And the Gemara gives a cryptic explanation. The Gemara says, when we talk here about rejecting judges, we are only talking about the Arkaos Shebisuria. We are talking about the courts that are in Syria. Now, what exactly does that mean, the courts that are in Syria? So if we think for a second before looking at Rashi, we know we have a Talmud Bavli, and we have a Talmud Yerushalmi. There are two main Torah centers in the time of Chazal, one in Bavel, which is modern-day Iraq, and one in Eretz Yisrael. Now, what's the flyover country? In the middle, you know, Syria is smack in the middle of Israel and Bavel. And apparently, there was not that much Torah happening in Syria. You wanted a yeshiva, you go to Bavel, you go to Eretz Yisrael. Syria, smack in the middle, it's not really much going on. So Rashi explains the reason why the judges, the courts of Syria, Rabbi Meir says if you want, you can disqualify the suggested judge. So Rashi says, Shelo hayu bikiyan b'din Torah. They were not experts in Torah. They didn't really know very much. Therefore, according to Rabbi Meir, the parties can reject each other's choices because we know that these judges do not know very much at all. Okay, now there are two questions to ask. One is, how little do they know? Right? Is this just like, you know, they spent a bunch of years in yeshiva, but they never really finished off their yud and yadin? You know, is it much less than that? That's question number one to ask. How little do they know? Question two that we need to ask is, if they aren't experts in halacha, what on earth are they doing serving as judges at all? Rabbi Meir said you could reject the other guy's judge, but he still agreed that they could serve as judges. The Chachamim, who we paskin like, disagreed with Rabbi Meir. And they said, you can't reject the other person's judge. He chooses the judge he's chosen. Well, if the person doesn't know that much, how on earth can he be acceptable? Now, you won't look at this at this one now, but we should just know there was one view in the Rishonim that thought this was completely unthinkable. Unthinkable that we have judges, we have a Beis Din where the judges do not know halacha. The Chidushei HaRan like bends over backwards to try as hard as he can to deny that there was ever such a thing as a recognized Jewish court where the judges did not know very much Torah. He tries very, very hard. He completely denies it. Only problem is the Gemara really sounds like we have this court where they don't know very much. And basically all of the other Rishonim interpret that Mishnah the same way Rashi did. That there is a case of Arkao Shebisuria, there is a case of this Syrian Beis Din in the middle of nowhere, where they have judges who don't know very much. Now, we want to know exactly how little do they know. Let's look at a wild question that was brought to the Rashba. So the Rashba is living in Spain in the 1200s, about 100 plus years before the events of 1391 that we talked about before. And take a look at the question he gets, these three lines of it. So he gets the question from this Rabbi Yaakov ben Katshef. That's a much cooler name than Goldstein. So, okay, fine. So he says, Sha'alta, Hodiani Masha Amru. So when they said in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, I think on Daf Zayin, Kol Hamamid Dayan She'inu Hagun Ki'ilu Notea Asher. Gemara says, anybody who establishes a judge who is no good. So Gemara says, it's as if he planted an idolatrous tree. So that's not a good thing to do. So we know bad judges is bad news. So Ketzad Naaseh, what should we do? Ba'ayarot She'ein Sham Mishe Yodea, in cities where you don't have anybody who knows, Afilu Os Achas. What do we do in cities where they don't know Aleph Beis? I don't know what's going on there, but the school system is not up to snuff. and they don't know anything. We need judges to judge and to arbitrate. We need judges. What are we going to do? And if we don't put up these Jews who don't know Aleph Beis, what are they going to do? They're going to go to the Christian courts. That's going to be much worse. And there's going to be compulsion. It's going to be totally corrupt. You know? At least, so basically the question is, can we set up a Jewish court where the judges are Jews, even though they know nothing, rather than going to the corrupt medieval Christian court where whoever is good friends with the Duke or gives a better bribe to the Baron is going to win the case? So the Rashba says the following. First of all, you guys really need to improve the educational system over here. This is definitely not acceptable. But he says, Im kiblum aleihem anshei ha'ir mutar. If the people in this city where they don't know Aleph Beis accept those guys as judges, it's okay. Be'erachan mehem yachola paslan. You can't reject them. Dehainu arkaos shebesuria. This is exactly what the Gemara was talking about. You're living in Syria. Okay, you're living in Spain, but Spain of your time, the Rishonim, and Syria of the Gemara's time are the exact same. A place where there are many Jews, but not a lot of Torah. So you make the best of what you got. So this is at least you'll find people who are are ethically sound, and they may not know very much, but that's what the Gemara said you do, right? Better Jews who don't know anything than going to but are ethical than the alternative. That's what the Rashba says, and the basis for this, the reason it seems to work, is at least the community has accepted them as judges. That was a line in the Gemara. The community accepts them as judges, okay, you make the best of what you've got. Now, the Rashba doesn't explain, okay, these people don't know Aleph Beis, based on what are they adjudicating the cases. Reuven and Shimon come in front of them with a loan dispute. You know, if you give them a Shulchan Aruch, these people wouldn't know to open it right side up or upside down. So what are they doing? What basis are they adjudicating the cases based on? So the Meiri writes about this as well. Meiri also reads the Arkal Shabasuria the same way as Rashi, the same way as the Rashba, most of the other Rishonim. And he says, so lo hayu bekiyin bedin Torah, they were not Torah experts. Ela shedanin laomer hadas, they would judge based on, you know, estimate of the mind. We will call, I guess, common sense. You know, you read the people, you're based on common sense. Uv chukim uv nimusim, and based on certain laws and traditions. So you make it work. You make it work. You choose fair, honest people. They'll use their common sense. They'll use some laws and traditions, and that's going to be okay. And the Ramah quotes this in Shulchan Aruch. The Ramah quotes that tshuva of the Rashba. If the people accept the judge, then that's going to be okay. Fine. So, you know, we'll stop here for the background, and now we can get to this all coming to bear on the debate in Israel. And the bottom line is, we have two Gemaras. On one hand, we have the Gemara in Gittin, which told us there was a severe prohibition, it's a chil Hashem, to bring your court cases to a Gentile court. We clarify that's even the case if it's not Avodah Zarah. However, on the other hand, if you have a Jewish court where they seemingly know nothing, that's going to be okay. As long as they're accepted by the community, because at least they're operating with the basic parameters of fair play and ethical sense. So now, how is that going to carry over to the Israeli court system? Where on the one hand, the judges are Jewish, they're certainly honest and fair, right? They're going to check off when the Rashba said, you know, find people who are ksherim. Okay, they're not Yirei Elokim, they're not God-fearing. But they're not accepting bribes, right? Mevinei Mada, they certainly understand things. You know, these judges have very advanced degrees. They're exceptionally educated, thoughtful, legal minds. They're Jewish, right? On the other hand, they're not using the Beis Din at all, and there are many Bati Din available. So what's the story? So we'll see. There are a couple of main lines back and forth that some of the poskim took on this one. So the Chazon Ish launches the first attack. right? Again, this is a live issue. The founding of the state, first time in 2,000 years, we have a Jewish government. Can a Jewish government possibly be recognized without Torah law? So kind of surprising to me. I would have thought the first attack would be, you can't use the Arkosha B'Suria when we're not in Syria. It's one thing if you're in the Gemara's Syria, where there are no Talmidei Chachamim. It's one thing if you're in those cities that the Rashba was talking about, where they didn't know Aleph Beis. But you're in Yerushalayim? You have Rav Isser Zalman Meltzer, you have the Chazon Ish, you have Rav Herzog. You're going to turn your back on these people and go to the secular court down the block and say it's all right because those are the Akosha of Assyria? That's what I would have thought would have been the main objection. You know, that basically the Chazon Ish would have said, you can't go to those courts because you got to come to the Chazon Ish. But it's actually not what the Chazon Ish says. The Chazon Ish takes a different attack. Right? Again, he's trying to prove that whole Gemara, that whole concept of Arkosha B'Suria cannot be applied now in Israel. And he says, what were those judges using? So he says they were using Musrei HaAdam, right? They were using human ethics, Baal Seichel, using their own common sense, their own intellect. And he says, Einam Rasha'im Lekabel Aleihem Chukei Amim O Lechokek Chukim. The Chazon Ish claims that those judges from Syria cannot use a legal system. They can't use laws. Once they have a book and they have laws and a system, I don't care if they're Roman or Greek or Muslim or Christian or Jewish. They're using a legal system that isn't Torah. That's unacceptable. What they were doing was they were using compromise, arbitration. He said what they were doing was Shofei called Din Shalafanav Lefianer Eilav. They just used, they called the shots the way they saw them. Zeo Bechlal Pshara. That's arbitration, compromise. In most cases, you go to a Bezin nowadays, almost always Pshara is what's going to be used, arbitration. The Einikar Hadavar She'azlu Makor Mayim Chaim Lachzov Berot Nishparim. It's not recognizable that they abandoned Torah. It would be one thing if they get the court case and then they start studying their books and their legal tomes. And you're like, wait a second, why is that some law book? Where's the Shulchan Aruch? They're not opening books at all. If they're not opening books, they're just, you know, adjudicating disputes like with their own common sense. There's no clear abandonment of Torah. And the Chazon Ish explains that is why the Arkosha B'Suria were okay, because they never tried to set it up as a legal system. But he says, Avalim yaskimu al chukim, if they have laws, harehe machalim es haTorah. That's a disgrace. That's a disgrace in the Torah. And he said, that's shartasim, lifneihem. You can't do it. That's the first pasuk. And our parasha prohibits, in parashas mishpatim. So based on that, says the Chazon Ish, Israeli court is out. It's out because it's a legal system that isn't Torah. Okay. Now, at the same time, as the Chazon Ish, you have Professor Rav Menachem Elon, who is the founder of the Mishpat Ivri school. He was a student in Chevron. Here, I think this is sometime in the 1940s. This is from Wikipedia. And you have the whole Chevron yeshiva. And look at everybody. They all look very sharp. They got their hats. They got their ties. They got the cool collars back then. There's one Talmud here who is not looking at the camera. Right? They're all like, here we go. He's looking off on the side. And this person who's not looking at the camera is Professor Rabbi Menachem Elon. A big Talmud Chacham, a big scholar, a massive, massive thinker in the first decades of the state of Israel. So he spends a lot of time in this world of Mishpat HaEvri, right, the Hebrew law. And his major effort in life is to try to bring halacha into the Israeli legal system. But he defends the halachic legitimacy of the Israeli court. And what does he say to the Chazon Ish? Again, the Chazon Ish had said, you can't go to the courts because it's a legal system that isn't Torah. So Rabbi Lon says to him, I don't know. I look at the Me'iri. The Me'iri doesn't seem to agree with the Chazon Ish. Nirashal Dasa Me'iri Ein HaDavar Kein. Because what did the Me'iri say those people were going to? So let's scroll up for a second. The Meiri said, what are they using to adjudicate the cases? Danin la omer hadas. They're using common sense estimate. Fine, that was exactly what the Chazon Ish described. But then the Meiri added two words. Uvchukim, uvnimusim. Laws and nimusim are also kind of like laws or customs. But what are these chukim and what are these laws? The Chazon Ish told me, no law. The Chazon Ish said only arbitration. Says Rabbi Lone, I don't know. Maybe said laws. Hainu lo rak lefi hanira lahem. They didn't just use their own common sense, the way they saw things. Ela lefi chukim v'nimusim mesudarim u'mekubalim. Organized and ordered and accepted law. So he says, I think the Chazon Ish is incorrect. So if I have a Jewish court, I don't care if they're using secular law or other, as long as there's no avodah zarah here, and you're not going to non-Jews, a secular court with a secular legal system, as long as it's Jewish, is going to be arkosh of Assyria. And he claims that that's okay. Now, one way the Chazon Ish could have responded was the Chazon Ish could have said, you know, we don't normally paskin like Meiris against other Rishonim. That would have been one possibility. We'll see. That's going to come back in a couple of minutes. But Rav Herzog, who's super invested in this, so he has a different response. It is a really interesting response to this point. So he says, what were the chukim? Let's take Rabbi Lone on his own. Let's assume he's right. Let's assume we paskin like the Meiri, that the Arkosh of Etzuria, those judges who are not experts in Torah law, they're allowed to use laws. Well, he says, let's think, what were the laws that they were using? They're living in the Roman Empire. So what, are they using Roman law? He says, according to Rabbi Lone, Yesh lanu l'ta'er la'atzmein, we are supposed to tell ourselves, Shehin lakhu es hachukim animusim, they took the laws. She so they have mehamishpat haromai. Do we think that that is what they did? They took Roman law. They took, you know, Hadrian. When Hadrian isn't killing Rabbi Akiva and he's not murdering the Yasar Harugi Malchus and he's not banning Torah study and Bris Mila and Shmiras and Mitzvos, and he wasn't busy being one of the worst oppressors of Jews in all time, a barbarian murderer. He was also busy writing a celebrated law code. So we think the Arkosh of Assyria, we're using Hadrian's law code, Rav Herzog basically says, and that's supposed to be okay. But it says Hadrian's law code on the cover, you know, on the book jacket. It says written by Hadrian, the murder of Rabbi Akiva. And that's going to be okay because the judges using it are Jews? He says, that's crazy. There's no way. There's no way that that was what the Arkosh of Assyria were using. There is no way that that is what the Meiri had in mind. So if it wasn't the laws of the day, what laws could they possibly have been using? So he says, no, all that the Meiri meant was, they came up with their own laws, their own rules and regulations, right? Their own local customs, their own ways of doing things. The Meiri never thought that the Arkosh of Assyria were using a whole legal system. They weren't going to Roman law school, and that was magically okay because they were Jews. The meant was they're using some, you know, like a handshake, right? A handshake is a right. If somebody, you know, two people come into a court and they say, you know, Reuben says, Shimon lent me $100. And they say, okay, well, we shook hands on the deal. Hey, our custom is, our recognized perspective, if you shake hands on a deal, that's really clinching the deal. They weren't quoting a law. They weren't saying based on, you know, volume V, law 32, line X. They're saying, we all know, we all assume that a handshake is legitimate. So that is the first major fight over here. Again, Rabbi Lone tries, the Chazon Ish says, Akash of Assyria, it has to be totally arbitration. He can't use a different legal system at all. Rabbi Lone responds to him and he says, I don't know, the Meiri is talking about a legal system. He's talking about laws. And then Rav Herzog comes back and fights against him and says, well, is it laws like a legal system? I don't think so. I think it was more likely that they were just using their own ad hoc rules that they came up with, but to actually go to a formal system, that should still be put up. Okay, that's major piece number one. Let's take 5 minutes to conclude the shiur to look at a couple of other sources, a couple of other rabbanim who were arguing about this exact question and how that really resonates. How does whole machlokas resonates if we take a step back down to this very day when we think about life in the Jewish state? Rav Goren Zatzal. So he goes to bat on the same team as Rav Ilam. He tries to defend the halachic legitimacy of the secular Israeli court system. He tries to defend that it is not a violation of Lifnei and below Lifnei, of Dekachav and Lifnei and below Lifnei. Yotos, he wants to show, really, it's okay. How does he defend? So he begins by setting things up. He begins by writing in a way in which, if you were on team Chazonish, team Rav Herzog, right, team anti the Israeli courts, you get very excited. He begins with the line of attack that we would have anticipated. That how can you use the Arkot Shebis Surya in a world where you have so many Talmidei Chachamim readily available? So he says, you're right, the Urim V'Tumim, that's Rav Yonah Sanaibashitz, it's a safer on Koshenish. But so he wrote, Shezer Rach B'Makom She'ein Bo Lomdei Torah. He wrote that you can only avail yourself of those Syrian Jewish courts if there are no Talmidei Chachamim around. And the Rashba says that, and the Ran says that. Okay, fine. So you have a group of Rishonim and Achronim who say exactly what we would want to say, that you cannot avail yourself of the Arkot Shebis Surya if you have a Torah option available. So that should be the end of the story. But continues Rav Goren, Ulam, Divrei Hami'iri Habruim Haniskarim Sosrim Es Divara. Says the Mi'iri contradicts this because the Mi'iri wrote that if the community accepts the judge, it's legitimate, no matter what. Now, if that was the end of the story, if it was only the Mi'iri on the one hand, and Rav Yonah and Eibeshitz, and the Ran, and the Rashba on the other hand, the majority would win, and we would go with the Mi'iri is not going to win. We would say that you can't go to the court that doesn't have, if there are Tzemach Hamamrim. But writes Rav Goren, well, if you look in the Ramah, you look in the Shulchan Aruch, and it sounds from him like he paskined like the Mi'iri, that no matter what, if the community accepts those judges, they're going to be okay. Because wrote the Ramah, we'll just read the bold quote over here. V'chein kol tzibur, any community, yecholin lekabel aleihem bezdin, they can accept the bezdin upon themselves, she'inam ru'uyim min ha-Torah, which are not, you know, halachically eligible judges. If the community accepts them, that's okay. Says Rav Goren, Mashma af kashish b'neim tamidei chachamim, even if there are Torah scholars available. Well, bring this over to Israel. It's a democratic country. We have elections. The people elect a Knesset. Then, and this is what's being fought over nowadays, how exactly does the selection process happen? But the Knesset is certainly involved in selecting the judges. So those judges were selected by the community. So Goren says, we're just following the Ramah. The Ramah said the community can accept mediocre judges. Now, we may not be so happy about that. We may not be ecstatic that the judges that the Israeli populace has selected are not experts in Choshen Mishpat and are not using halacha as their system. But the bottom line is, they accepted these judges, and that's all that we require. That is the claim of Rav Goren. That is what the Arkot Shebis Surya were. It may be an unfortunate reality, but it's a reality, and it's legitimate. It's okay. It's okay. That is the claim of Rav Goren. Community accepts them. That's really is all that there is to talk about. So there are two main responses to this as well, each coming from different perspectives. One is a view of Rav Avadi Yosef, who also quotes a tshuva from a feat from Rav Tzvi Pesach Prag. Again, like anybody who's anybody is jumping in on this question in the founding decades of the state. Rav Avadia and Rav Tzvi Pesach Prag, so they both throw into question a fundamental assumption we've made until now. Until now, we've assumed that the way we can have this discussion in the first place is because, yeah, the Torah said Ela hamishpatim asher tasim lifnehem. Don't bring your court cases to the Gentile courts. And Rashi said it's a chil Hashem to bring it to the Avodah Zarah. And we quoted from the Tashbates that the same is true for a court which is Islamic and then expands to a court which is secular. We said all that is a non-Jewish court. What if it's a Jewish court? If it's a Jewish court, isn't it better? Then it's going to be okay. Right to Rav Avadya, right to Tipas Akran. Absolutely not. Right, here's the quote from Tipas Akran. Vaday shu garu yoser migay. It's worse that they're going to the Jewish court. But Rav Gorin was telling me it's okay because they're accepted by the community. They say, oh my gosh, how can that be? The guy, he doesn't have to use Shulchan Aruch. You know, Shev Meses Bnei Noach, one of the seven commandments that Noachites have is to set up a court system. But he says they don't need to use Dat Yisrael. Aval Yudi Zesh Mitzvah L'Dun Al Pi HaTorah. We need Torah. V'hu Misnaker Elah. He abandons it. V'dun Al Pi HaMajleh Shel HaAtomanim. What? They're using Ottoman, the Ottoman legal system is what we're using? U'Sha'ar Chukei Mod HaOlam Shalem Namar Yotzer HaMal HaChok. It's terrible. It's even worse. So reminding to, and Mitzvah Frank say, how can you just blithely tell me, oh, as long as Jews accept it, it's going to be okay. It makes it so much worse. It makes it so much worse. A fundamental clash here, right? Do we look at this from like a narrow technical perspective? Well, technically, you know, the Gemara said that judges, you can accept Jewish judges come as they may be. And technically speaking, the Rama may have said that that applies to whomever the community accepts. That is what Rav Gorin is trying to argue. And Rav Avadya and Rav Tzvi Frank say, my gosh, take a giant step back. How can you be okay? How can you sign off on a reality where the Jews are abandoning Torah for Ottoman law, and that's supposed to be okay? And the last point is sharpened by another attack from Rav Herzog. And what's really interesting about Rav Herzog's other attack is that he kind of, you know, he doesn't really argue this line from a halachic perspective so much as from a Zionist perspective. He says, I'll argue on your own terms. You know, you want to convince a Chiloni Jew that he should go Shulchan Aruch. I mean, good luck. You know, quoting Urim Tumim's Adam is not going to get you very far. Rav Herzog, though, takes a line of attack based on their own assumptions. And he says, as good Zionists, what are we doing? So he says, what system are we using? He says, where do we get this from? He says, Gam mishpat shehitila alinu hamemshala hamandatorit. Right? The legal system we have comes from the mandatory government. What was that? The government of Great Britain, the British Mandate. Mishpat Tsar. Remember, we're writing here in the early 1950s. What was happening in the last decade? Zo shebagda banu. The British betrayed us. Any Zionist hears Great Britain in 1953, you shouldn't immediately think, wow, what an amazing society. What an amazing legal system. I want to take British law and make it Israeli law. Your blood should boil, he says. That's who you want. That's who your role model. No offense, he has British connections here. That's who you want, the British? Shebagda banu, they betrayed us. Batchila baseter bacharkach begalui. At first, they betrayed us secretly and then openly. Well, they cut off immigration and they were hand in glove with the Arabs. Then they trained the Arab Legion. You know, you have British officers working with Jordanian troops who were attacking Israel. That's why we lost Yerushalayim. Right? They tried as hard as they could. They tried as hard as they could to wipe us out, the Jordanians, with the help of the British. Right. And now Hashem has helped us push back and we're bursting forward. Despite their best efforts against us, the state has been founded and it gets stronger and stronger every day. But that's who you want? You want British law? And then he has another fascinating line. He says, what are the alternatives here? Right? The way that they're probably presenting it is, look, we have two options. These rabbis, they want us to go to some medieval, complicated halachic system where it doesn't work. Everything is old. It needs to be it's outdated. How can you possibly have a modern state with halacha at the core of its laws? We need new, modern, secular law. That's the claim. So Rav Herzog says, Rav Osai, let's look at what we're subjecting our poor Israeli law students to. Nebuch, what do these kids have to go through when they go to law school? What are the laws they have to learn? What is the law made out of that we're working with? It's a mess. It's a balagan. It's a disaster. We just have random piles on piles of stuff. Chok Briti, Algabe Chok Turkey. So if you know, we have British law, and that's piled on top of some of the old Ottoman law, and it's mixed together into some chalent, and like Adayom Hazeh, Israeli law is a total mess because that's where its origins come from. So he says, that's what you want. We're going to replace the Shulchan Aruch with this chalent, and not a good chalent. Good chalent, one thing, but this bad chalent of random countries and random laws, half of whom, you know, tried to wipe us out and were totally opposed to us. It's a fascinating line of argument. He says, even if this stuff was like Koresh, you know, even if Britain was as wonderful as Koresh and they had sent us back to Israel and tried to help us set up a new state. And he says, even if the law was so clean, and none of it is, he says, how could it be? Anyway, as proud Zionists, we should want Jewish law. And as proud Jews, the proud Hadati, religious Jews, we should want Torah law, right? And so how could it be that we're taking this opportunity that we've had for the first time in 2,000 years and we're throwing it all away? Hamibli ein Elokim b'Yisrael v'golman. So now if we take one giant step back, and I'll close the source sheet, I think what's so interesting for the way we think about the state of Israel, you know, is really two major things. One, and this is sad, is that you sense the excitement, right, that the poskim have, the newness. We have a state. For the first time, we've been subjected to Russians, Ottomans, British, Spanish, Algerians, every other government. We had to deal with their system. Finally, we have our chance. What are we going to do with it? And Herzog put that on his list of the big four that we need to figure out what we're going to do. Over the course of the years, as we've gotten used to the reality of having a Jewish state, the novelty of this, the pressiness of this, has kind of begun to wear off. Reality sets in. It's not going to be everything we hoped it would be. And some of the dream begins to fade. And it shouldn't be that way. We should not take for granted the amazingness of the opportunity we have, the way it is bursting forward out of the enthusiasm of all of these posts on all sides of the issue, who are saying, look how amazing it is that we have the chance to think about this and to debate this now. We've been dreaming of this moment for 2,000 years. That's major piece number one. And major piece number two is the two major schools of thought we have here about how the question of what the halacha wants the chachiv and what the reality is today in today's day and age in Israel, when those clash, what do we do? Because there's no question that Rav Goren and Rav Ilon, if they totally had their druthers, they would certainly sign on for the Shulchan Aruch being the law of the land. Elamai. One view is, we've got to compromise. Work within the system. Things aren't going to be the way that you'd want. There are many, 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 many citizens of Israel who have no interest in the Shulchan Aruch whatsoever. And so the way to move forward is to work with the system, work within the system, set up this mishpat ivri, try to get whatever halacha in we can, right? Be accommodating and make the most of the situation. And by working within the system, you can get a lot done than if you stand outside the system, right? That's one major, very legitimate view. And the other view is, once you begin compromising, once you begin working within the system, once you begin, okay, well, if we really, you know, bend the Meiri's arm all the way back until it almost breaks, we can force a view which is going to be defensible, but it's not really so compelling. Absolutely not. We're not going to give in. We're going to say, 2,000 years we've been waiting. We have the chance to have a Jewish state. it should have Jewish law. And from a halachic perspective, from a nationalist perspective, from a Zionist perspective, we're not going to give up on the dream. We're going to be hardcore about it. Right? That is basically the machlokas you have here between these camps. And obviously, there is a lot of merit to each one of the two. Right? And I think it's important for us, we think about where Israel is holding, where we think vis-a-vis the state, right? To try to keep both of those attitudes in mind. On the one hand, appreciating the amazing miracle of a pluralistic state of Israel, right? There are so many different kinds of Jews, Baruch Hashem, everyone trying to get along and trying to make, so many times, you know, it's a world of compromise. And compromise means we get some of what we want, we've got to give. And figuring out how to work within the system, how to get as far as we can, given the way things are. But at the same time, even as we adapt, and even as we adapt, and even as we compromise, right, making sure that the fundamental dream, the fundamental aspiration, the hope that things can one day be what they really, really should l'chachila be, that we really can have a state which is not just a Jewish state where, you know, they speak Hebrew and the Chagim are on the Coca-Cola labels, but a state where you walk in and emblazoned inside the state itself is the Eila HaMishpatim Asher Tassin L'Fayim, Torah and Kashrus and Shabbos and everything is the way it should be, right? Being breathed out of every pore to hold on to that dream, even as the reality of the state has unfolded decade after decade, is something which I think is absolutely essential. Holding on to both of you, Rabbi Lon and Rabbi Goren, let's work with, let's compromise, and look how much we can build, while also thinking the perspective of the Chazon Ish and perspective of Rav Herzog, of look, there is so much more that we can expect and so much more that we can demand and we can hope for. That is exactly the name of the game of what it's meant to be a religious Zionist Jew over the last 75 years. And God willing, the same to be true for many, many more. So Shkach, everybody, have a great Shabbos, and thank you so much for coming to learn.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good Shabbos, Rabbi Ashikoch.
Yes, Shkach. Okay, good night, everybody.
Thank you.